And we're live at 102, pretty good for the boomer crowd. We are the Maple Minds podcast. We're live every Tuesday at 1 o'clock Pacific time. And big announcement, starting this Friday, we're also going to be live every Friday at 1 o'clock Pacific time. We have expanded our show to go twice a week. There's just so much to talk about. You guys, we're headed in to a federal election. We're headed into possibly a global trade war. Lots to talk about. So you're going to see us twice a week, I hope.
Yep.
Hope you come along for the ride. Make sure you follow us on our TikTok page so that we can get to 1,000. Give Polly her account back. I'm Christy. That's Sherry on the bottom because she was late for once. And that's Polly. And we're talking everything today from federal, provincial, and international. We're going to start with federal because that's the biggest news. First, before we get into the news stuff, I would just like to say happy April Fool's Day to everybody. It is April 1st, the day before Liberation Day in the States. Mm-hmm. And our very own Polly got gotten by Matt. Oh,
yes, she did.
Let me tell you something, man. I watched these PPC guys. I listened to these PPC guys. The very first sentence, I knew it was an April Fool's. This man is never, ever going to join with the Conservatives ever.
No. He despises Polyev.
Yes,
he does. Despises him.
Yeah. He got me.
Yeah.
He got her, though. He got her.
I thought they were merging. He got me.
It's good to know that they at least have a little sense of humor.
Yes. And because these are heavy times, man. We're less than a month away from an election. Yeah. It is very heavy times. I think that kind of humor, I think it's welcome, honestly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
All
absolutely.
Right, now let's just jump into the big news. There's so much big news of the day. Oh. One of the biggest headlines of the day is the absence of two candidates, one from the Liberal camp and one from the Conservatives.
Yeah.
Where do you want to start, Sherry?
We can start, I guess we'll start in order, chronological order. The scandal for Paul Chang broke on Friday. So Paul Chang is the Liberal MP from Ontario. I think it's, what was it, Markham Unionville? I think.
Oh, yeah, I believe
Friday.
So.
Yeah. And he was a police chief for 25 years in the community. He's been in that community for a really long time. Back in January, he made some very offensive remarks bordering on intimidation remarks about Joe Tay, who is the Conservative MP running in that riding as well. I have since learned a lot of things about Joe Tay, and they're not good. They are not good. But anyways, getting back to Paul Chang, he said because Joe Tay is an advocate, he describes himself as an advocate for democracy and free speech in Hong Kong. And the Chinese government, it was a political charge, right? Like he was trying to undermine the sovereignty of China or something, like trying to undermine China in Hong Kong. And they issued a bounty on his head back in December of $1 million in Hong Kong dollars and equal about 184,000 Canadian. And he was at this Chinese language event where he made a joke on stage that if anybody, that this bounty was out for Joe Tay and somebody should maybe turn him into the Chinese consulate. That was the remark. It wasn't good. It wasn't a good look. It was one of those really bad jokes where you think it's funny, but nobody else laughs.
And it's not only just not funny. It's only not just offensive. It's dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah. But he didn't think it through.
Yeah.
What I think it comes down to. He didn't think it through because this guy, Joe Tay, is no peach. Let me tell you, I was watching, I don't know. I tagged you in Cole, not Cole. Yeah. He is not a good guy. He is not a good guy. And the fact that he knew about this in January and sat on it until now makes it very sus. That does not negate the fact that it was very bad.
It was bad. I think before we get into the Mark McKenzie, the Conservative MP that's no longer in the race as well, when you say that he sat on this, are they sitting on Mark too? Did they do this the whole time just so that they can say, look at us, we've got more integrity than the Liberals? It's a gamble to see if they would have kick Chang or not. And personally, yes, I believe that Carney should have kicked him. I appreciate that Chang has stepped away on his own. I think Carney should have kicked him.
But here's the thing. And I thought so too. And I ran to make that video yesterday morning. And God damn it, I wish I would just stop and think before I make these videos unfolding stories. Because this is like the third time this has happened to me, where I get on my soapbox and I say my thing. And then by the end of the day, I'm taking the video down because I've gotten more information coming in. And maybe it's not that cut and dry. So anyways, a lot of people pointed out that Carney is a corporate guy. He's a business guy. I know you don't react immediately. You pull them off the floor or whatever, or you pull them away. You have a talk to them and then you investigate. And while Carney did say in the media that the guy apologized and he was going to stick by him, a lot of people pointed out that there's a lot we don't know that happened in the background, and that possibly the thing was that candidate, the incumbent, was very much liked in his community, and it's a Chinese community. They didn't want to see another situation where he was accused of taking an MP out of the riding like he did in Neapim, how Chandra Arya was dropped. Because that was a big thing too. So what people were pointing out to me was that they think that he probably said what he said in the morning, but then they talked to him behind the scenes saying, look, this is not good. You need to drop. And letting the guy have the dignity of being able to step down by himself so they don't anger the constituency, because he's quite liked in the constituency. And it comes across much better if the guy steps down of his own accord than having been removed by the Liberals.
You know what? I agree with you. I think I would agree stronger if the resignation started with, I talked to Mark Carney and we agreed.
Yeah.
I would like part of this decision to be credited to Carney. Because when you're saying, look at it from a business point of view, I think the guy's a liability. I think that your credit that you're investing in him is not going to be rewarded. And I think it's going to hurt you more than it helps you. So I think cut your losses. But I do agree with everything that you've said.
Also, just a case in point too, is this a very similar situation happened with Selena Robinson and David Eby. David Eby came out and backed her. He didn't back her. He said the remarks were incredibly offensive and he understood how upsetting this was. And he removed her from the cabinet. It took a week for her to come out and resign herself and step down. He wasn't saddled with, I got rid of the Jewish MP. Because of her comments, she did it on her own. It's a better look for him. It's a better look for the party. And it gives her some dignity and accountability for the things that she did. But we don't know, right? We don't know.
I do the accountability angle. I like that, because Chang had stepped aside on his own. That is a step towards accountability instead of getting kicked. So I respect that. Thing that they have in common, that Chang and McKenzie from the Conservatives have in common, is that they both are not running any longer because they ran their mouths. So we talked about how Paul Chang had inappropriately bounty hunted this guy.
Yeah.
Not bounty hunted, but so let's talk about McKenzie.
Mark McKenzie, who's an old DJ from, sorry, just a second here. I just found this out by Gonzo Phil.
Follow
him. Yeah, he was saying that he knew him as a DJ for an alternative rock station in Ontario. And actually, I've heard some not so great things about this guy since, but he came out apparently in 2022 on a podcast, which has pretty much been scrubbed from the internet, suspiciously enough. He was quoted as talking about being for public hangings and wanting public executions and wanting to install the death penalty back in Canada. Throughout the course of that conversation, said that Justin Trudeau deserved to be executed, basically, is what he said. And again, this was said in 2022.
In February 18th, 2022, which that timing puts it right after the convoy.
And when you do a deep dive on a candidate, you research all that stuff. So they knew what he was about.
Here's another thing. Talking about research in candidates, and I just thought of this. I don't know if you remember, there was a protest against drag queen story time in Nova Scotia. I believe it was Nova Scotia. It was in the Maritimes. Yeah. And somebody brought a picture that they told everybody was mutilated genitals.
Yes, I remember.
He's running too. He's running for the PPC.
Oh, is he really?
Jeff Eberle. Yeah. He's running somewhere over in Nova Scotia.
Anyway, so getting back to Mark McKenzie, I was reading the CTV article this morning. CTV got it and actually reached out to the CPC for comment, got the audio, reached out for comment. An hour later, they responded, said he's been removed. And when Pierre was asked about it on his way to the plane with his big freaking name across it, let's not even talk about that, he gave like just one word answers, like he's gone.
Yeah.
It is. I don't want to talk about it.
And if there's anybody who poured the gas on the speak that way of Justin Trudeau, it's Pierre Poilievre.
And it's just such hypocrisy because the thing with Ching and Creek Pete made a very good point this morning. They've been riding this liberal story since Friday. Since Friday. That's all you've heard about. And yet when I went into my Apple News curated news feed this morning, not one story about the conservative. Not one story about the conservative being removed from the race. And the only news outlet I've seen this morning was CTV talking about it. That was the only one.
And social media. But the mainstream media, on social media, I have noticed how many people have pointed out that mainstream media feels like it's shaking its pom-poms for the conservatives.
Yeah. So
anyways, speaking of conservatives, we've covered the two MPs and why they're not there anymore, because they were yapping about stuff that nobody should yap about. And to all the free speech people who says we should be allowed to say anything, I never said they couldn't. I said they shouldn't. And I think society would do a better job in general if we went back to shouldn't and not just worried about what we can or can't do. Anyway,
and let me be perfectly rant clear. Over. Let me be perfectly clear. I do believe that both of them should have been removed from the race.
So do I.
That they said.
Absolutely. So do I. So conservative campaign, there's been a lot of stuff in the, I just said that the mainstream media feels like they're cheering for the conservatives, but they've also highlighted some senior conservative people who are saying this guy's inability to pivot, they're being stubborn, they're not listening to anybody, they're doing what they want to do instead of what needs to be done in order to win. Pierre's trying way, in my opinion, this is just a Christie thing, this is not something that was reported. Christie says, this guy's trying way too hard, man. He's spilling pizza, doing the ham thing without the ham, like he's slicing deli meat without the meat on it. He's serving ice cream. He's making donairs or something. He's trying too hard. Why not just talk to people? Why do you need all of these I'm just like you props? We know you're not. We know you've been a politician your whole life. We know you've never touched a damn pizza. We don't need you to spill one to show us. Why not just be real? He has these moments, honestly, when he has these moments of, you guys, I've been talking about this for 10 years, and he gets into his comfort zone and he talks about some of the stuff that he has fought for, even if I don't agree with how he's fought for it and the stuff that he has fought for, I think that is the genuine Pierre. He's so much more comfortable there, obviously, than when he's awkward around the pizza or the deli slice or all this other phony shit that they're using to try to campaign, in my opinion.
To be fair, Jagmeet also made a pizza video. Now, his pizza was very nice. Now, however, I'm going to say I was surprised. I think it's the parent in me. I actually felt really bad for Pierre botching that pizza in front of his kid. I did. I felt really bad for him. And I was shocked because I didn't think I had that in me for him because he's such an odious human being. Yep. But I watched that and I thought, oh, and the way he was torn for it all across social media to fail like that in front of your kid. Yeah. That's hard. That's really hard.
I did. We'll give him points for laughing. Yeah. I think it is important to laugh at yourself.
Yeah.
But if I'm his campaign person, I'm not putting him in those positions anyways. No. And let me tell you something. I haven't seen the Jagmeet video yet. I'm going to go watch it. But just how I pictured in my brain, even if he does flub it, it makes more sense to me. Jagmeet in a pizza place, in a small business. fits in my brain.
Yeah.
Pierre doesn't fit in my brain. No. Pierre is acting, and Jagmeet, like, we've met him in person too. Like, he's real. And when he's talking about wanting to support small businesses, believe the guy. I don't believe that's a campaign thing. When Pierre says it, I think it's a campaign thing.
The one with his wife to me was particularly cringe because she looked like she wasn't impressed. And she said, oh, I've got to watch my diet. And he said, don't worry about your diet, as he's ramming the spoon in her mouth. And
which, like, one is this?
That's the one where he made the ice cream sundae for his wife. And she's standing off to the side and you can see she's, oh no, I don't want this. I don't want this. And he's, oh, don't worry about your diet. And he's, while he's loading up a scoopful of ice cream with whipped cream and candies and everything on it. And he's like guiding, he's like putting it, shoving it in her mouth as she's, and you could tell she was not impressed, but it was just like, that one really
awkward.
That was awkward. I didn't like that.
And also, she's not running.
No, but she's embedded herself in that campaign. Yeah, she has.
All of the smooching pictures, too. I don't care. Yeah. Like, first of all, it's weird to come from the party of, oh, we don't want homosexuals to shove it in our faces. So what we're going to do is we're going to shove our kissing in everybody else's faces.
Yeah.
But the thing is, for me, the reason I don't like it isn't because it's cringy. It is cringy. I think it's corny as but I digress. I think it feels American. I can't think of another wife of a prime minister who actively campaigned. Correct me if I'm wrong. You know so much more about this than I do. But to me, that feels American.
What it brings back for me is Sophie Trudeau and how she was hammered. But at every turn, everything she tried to do, and the cry from the Conservatives continually was, we don't have a First Lady in Canada. We don't pay for her. Why is she wearing designer Canadian clothes? Why is she going to these events? Who's paying for that? Why are we paying for her nanny? Why are we paying for her chef? And yet Anna is everywhere.
Well, she was. Why was she in the meeting with Legault?
Yeah. Yeah. That's like J.D. Vance bringing his wife or Pete Hegseth bringing his wife.
Yeah, bringing his wife.
Yeah. Military discussions.
You know, he hired his brother, too.
No, that doesn't surprise me.
Anyways, word on the street is that Conservatives are concerned about the way that Pierre's blowing it. This guy went from being ahead 20 in the polls to, I believe he's behind by 19 at the moment. I believe
It depends on the poll that you look at. Yeah, it depends. There's some where there's statistical tie, but remember, a popular vote doesn't really mean anything in Canada because you can be statistically tied or even have less of the popular vote and still have more seats.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't matter if 4 million people in Alberta think that you're the shit. It's not going to translate into seats for you. And I had this argument with some 20-year-old pipsqueak the other day who kept telling me I wasn't critically thinking. And it's too sad that old people don't know how to critically think. And I'm like, dude, he was trying to tell me that Pierre hasn't imploded at all. And the only reason why the CPC is dropping in the polls is because of the NDP. And it's the NDP's fault for not managing their party properly. And I was like, dude, 29% of conservative voters that intended to vote conservative in December have walked across to the liberals now. 29%. And while his base is continuing to say that they're going to vote for him no matter what, only 71%, which is the highest out of all of them, is still only 71% of 37% of the vote that are committed.
The things that Pierre Poilievre are putting forward too, and I think Carney's a little bit guilty for this as well, is everything that they're putting forward, you have to have money, like up your tax-free savings account, $5,000, capital gains tax, deferred. People who don't have money don't worry about these things. And they're not talking about people who are below the poverty line or can't afford these things.
Yeah.
Although I thought that the TFSA announcement from Pierre was just so out of touch. I'm like, you just spent the last 3 years reminding everybody why they're broke, telling everybody that you're broke. You have no money. By the way, if you have an extra $5,000, you can put in your TFSA. Come on, man.
Yeah. Now I will push back a little bit when we're as we segue into policy about Carney. He did actually mention housing for homelessness, seniors and students. That's all part of his housing plan and Indigenous and treatment centers that correlate with that supportive housing. So he is thinking about those less flush or low income and vulnerable communities. And he constantly talks about those vulnerable communities. So he is aware of those things. And I see that his policies do try to help. Wait and see if they're going to be enough.
Happy says expanded healthcare as well for Liberals.
Yeah. Yeah. So that, and that's why I keep saying he's not a centrist. Everybody keeps saying, oh, he's a centrist or he's a right winger. And it's, but I don't know any right wingers that would bring government intervention back into the housing market. I don't know of any conservative policy where they would do that.
So two things about his housing policy, because that was announced this week, same week that Pierre Poilievre talked about housing in the ladies' biological clocks are ticking, guys. Anyways,
wow.
So here's the conversation that I've been having. What it was about more vulnerable communities, because those are the ones that are affected the most. And when he's talking about building the wartime housing and the pace in which they're going to put up houses is going to be increased. Mm-hmm. So I would like to know more about housing for low income, disabled, seniors, Indigenous. I would like to know more about that. But also, since housing is managed provincially and this guy's set in federal rules, how do you get the provinces to align? Do you think that's an issue?
No.
Which provinces I'm talking about?
Yeah, of course. Here's my thing about Danielle Smith. I don't think she's going to be a lot of bark right now because it's the election and she wants Pierre to win. But you watch, once Carney gets in, he'll get her in line.
I don't know. Here's another thing. I 50% agree with you. I've never been so in the middle. I'm usually leaning one way, but I'm totally in the middle. I think that is an either. And I think the or is how many people who are talking about, oh, if Carney gets it, then Alberta's definitely leaving. First of all, no, they're not. If Quebec couldn't do it in the 70s, you guys can't do it now, in my opinion. I think that there's a possibility that she pushes for a referendum and she pushes for a conversation about it and she pushes for the Prairies to join the States. I don't think she's successful, though. I don't.
She can't. Because in 1995, when Quebec did their referendum and it barely lost, the First Nations took them to court. And it was ruled by the Supreme Court that Quebec could not separate because it would be illegal because of the treaties with Indigenous people. And I had this argument with somebody the other day online. The treaties are not held with our government. They're held with the King of England and they're governed under the Indian Act. And they are not governed by the province. They are not governed by the federal government. And so that land is not her land to take with her to the US. It is against the law. It violates international law and the treaties with the King of England and the Windsors. And so she can't take that land. And most of the resources that she wants to take with her are on treated land. And those treaties are massive. I looked at a map of them the other day, and I think it also includes unceded territory, which BC is fully unceded, which means that there are no treaties, but they have not given up their rights to the land. So there's a big piece of the pie that people in Alberta, these separatists in Alberta, are not paying attention to.
So I'll tell you what they are paying attention to.
Yeah.
Because Keith Wilson talked about it. Keith Wilson was the lawyer who was doing
the guy who's auditioning for Dallas.
You know what? Yeah, he does. Larry Hagman.
Yeah.
So anyway, he was talking about the same Supreme Court ruling that you're talking about.
Yeah.
So I agree with absolutely everything that you said, and I still say what I say.
Yeah.
Because they're focusing on the part, and it was 98, by the way. I think it started in 95, but the decision came out in 98, in case anybody wanted to look it up. And it talks about how if you win a referendum where 2/3 of your population agree on it and they have to grant you a conversation. Doesn't say you're going to be successful, just says that if you can get 2/3 of the people, which they don't have, honestly, they don't have that many people who want to, but if they did, then they can get a conversation. But honestly, that's all they're going to get. But I think on, I still think it's possible that's what she pushes for. And I think that the reason is because her American puppet masters, for lack of a better word, are telling her that she can. That's what I think.
Yeah. Yeah. But they don't understand Canadian law. They think they understand Canadian law, but they don't. They're Americans interpreting Canadian law, and they're not going to be trying cases in Canadian courts. They've only tried cases in American courts, and they can tell her all that they want. The thing is that she might not even make it that far if this RCMP investigation reveals what we think it's going to reveal. And then on top of that, I'm sure CSIS is probably looking into her now and looking at all of her connections and looking at what kind of national security threat she is, because she's quite defiant about it. I'm not it. They're calling me a traitor and they're calling me treasonous and I'm not any of those things. It's, you are.
Yeah, you are.
You absolutely are. So is Scott Moe. You both are. And I think that we see an RCMP investigation, and I think that it doesn't go very well for her or Moe, honestly.
I agree. And I think we hear about the Turkish Tylenol in there too.
Yeah.
I think that was part of the shady, shady.
Yeah.
But we're not from Alberta.
No,
we're from BC. So we're now going to spend the next 15 to 20 just talking about provincial political issues in our beautiful province. And we're going to start with the carbon tax removal.
Yes. So they had an emergency legislature last night.
David Eby?
No, I'm talking about the sitting in the legislature last night to debate getting rid of the carbon tax. And of course, Rustad, he's got a push for removing all carbon pricing in the province. But luckily, he does not have a majority, and he is actually quite in a weak position now that his five MLAs broke off on their own, and it passed. So at midnight last night, they removed the consumer pricing in British Columbia. So we've had consumer pricing here since 2008. We were one of the first actually, Alberta was the very first jurisdiction. And then we were the second jurisdiction, along with Quebec, to introduce consumer carbon pricing before there was a federal backstop. And one of the things Eby ran on was that if the federal backstop was removed, he would remove BC's consumer carbon pricing. And people were very upset about it, but people forget that the NDP never supported consumer carbon pricing in this province. And actually, for all you people out there that complain that Pierre keeps plagiarizing from Mark Carney, his whole Axe the Tax rally came from the BC NDP in 2008, while they were fighting against the BC Liberals implementing the BC carbon tax. They actually had a whole campaign about Axe the Tax in 2008. So they were never fans of this because they felt that it would harm low-income people, which is why they ended up having a rebate. But it's a means-tested rebate. So it's not like the federal one where everybody gets their rebate. So people that earn over $55,000 in their family, they don't get it. And BC is expensive to live in. And the gas out here is very expensive. And so we have some of the highest gas prices across the country. And so
the highest, because I've been looking, because a lot of people said, oh, they're going to drop it by 17 cents. They're just jacking it up ahead of time so that when they drop it. But really, if you look at the stats, like I said, I made a video in 2022 where it was well over $2.
Yeah.
And so as of this morning, it's around $1.74. Yesterday, it was $1.91 in my neighborhood.
I think I remember it going up to $2.35 or something like that, a liter in Vancouver, something like that. Yeah. So anyways, the thing though, that's really good about this is that everybody's always worried, oh, the gas prices, the gas companies are just going to absorb that because they know how much the consumers were willing to pay now. And AB was very clear with the oil and gas companies. They said that the Utilities Commission has, they've given the Utilities Commission the ability to deal with price gouging and to investigate price gouging. And if any, he said, let me be clear. You know how he does that. Let me be clear. If oil and gas are trying to prey upon the people of British Columbia, you will be taken to task and you will face appropriate consequences. So there, he's very adamant about not having any gouging happening from the oil and gas companies because of this. He thought about that, which is good, I thought. And yeah, I never really minded paying it, but I won't lie. The less $30 or $40 on my Fortis bill is going to be nice.
Yeah.
You know, that's like a sushi lunch or something. It's nice to have, to not have to pay that anymore. So anyways, I guess.
Let's talk about another thing that Dave Beebe did. He made changes to Bill 7. Which he was very strongly criticized on. I made a video in defense of it. And we had talked about Bill 7 last week on the Maple Lines podcast, where we said, I think the real litmus test of, are you really okay with this? Or are you only okay with it because it's your guy, is would you be okay if it was the other guy doing the same thing? And a lot of people had accused Eby of trying to gain autocratic power by putting something in the bill that said, I don't need to talk to anybody else before I implement something to do with either interprovincial trade or procurement or taxes or tolls in response to the tariffs and the economic crisis that the tariffs are going to put on us.
Yeah.
A lot of people said, no, you can't have all that power just to yourself. So he changed it, but is the damage done already, do you think?
No, I think it was a good move. I think it's, he did exactly what governments are supposed to do, which is listen to the people, right? And it just disproves all those dictatorship and authoritarian accusations. What kind of authoritarian and dictator do you know would listen to all the stakeholders, including the party they were in agreement with, and come out and change accordingly? And he said that. He said he listened to everyone. He listened to the unions. He listened to the labor. He listened to Indigenous. He listened to everybody about it, including his opposition, which really he doesn't have to listen to them because let's face it, they're out there.
It almost seems like everybody they disagree with is a tyrant or a dictator.
Yeah.
But how best to prove that you're not that by going, okay, I've heard all of you. I understand we got it wrong. We went back to the drawing board and we have changed. We have listened to your concerns and we have adjusted accordingly. That's exactly what you want from a government.
Yeah, it is exactly what you want from a government, from a good leader. I think that one of two things are more likely from other leaders. Either you have the actual dictator that says, nope, you love it. You love it because I say you love it and it's happening anyways, no matter what. And, or you have the egotistical leader where, how dare you challenge something that I am right about this. And I think we see a lot of egos really spend their time digging their heels in and trying to make their case of why they're right instead of saying, you know what, I'm not going to win this one. It's a waste of time to try to do it. Mm-hmm. People don't want this. I got to find another way to find a way to expedite the processes in order to have a speedy response to these tariffs without doing it the way that I wanted to, because I'm not going to get that passed.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that when you said the two types of leaders there, who's going to take it whether you like it or not, I immediately thought of Christy Clark and the HST. Do you remember that? Christy Clark and the HST?
Nobody. I was going in a Trump direction, but you bring up a great point about that.
Nobody wanted the HST. Nobody wanted it. Yep. And she did it anyways.
Yep.
And people were so angry that they had to put it to a referendum. And she ended up repealing it because she pissed off so many people by saying, I don't care what you think. You're going to take this anyways. There you go.
I saw her. I didn't really read the whole article, but it was talking about lack of qualified candidates and our political climate right now chasing away the most qualified candidates. And there's her picture. And I'm like, Come on, man.
Yeah, I was really nervous she was going to run for Fleetwood Port Hills. And I just thought, I think that because she was on TikTok, when she said she was going to announce the leadership bit, I wonder if she saw some videos about her and how much people still despise her. And that's one of the reasons why she pulled her bid.
I think it is very possible. I think that because I remember when she first came on the scene, I remember thinking, this lady is either clueless about the amount of credit that she actually has, or she's pretending. It's possible that she was clueless and she got clued in. I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, let's move to our last provincial point before we go international, and let's talk about the Stanley Park scandal.
Okay, so now we know why Ken Sim wanted to get rid of the Vancouver Park Board.
Yep. Did you hear he got booed at the Junos?
No, did he?
Oh, I heard. I don't know if it's true. I heard he was up to announce something because, like, it's in his city, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, I heard that he wasn't
good. Good. He should be. He canceled the supportive housing, eh? They've canceled all the supportive housing now. Anyways, and they're coming up to an election. There's a by-election happening, which I have to remember to vote in. And if anybody's listening that's from Vancouver, don't forget to vote in the by-election. We do not want two more ABC councillors on the city council.
Sorry, one second. Before we get into Stanley Park, I wanted to mention something else about the carbon tax change in BC. While I appreciate cheaper prices, I'm not the one who needs help with the cheaper prices. And the people who need the most help used to get a rebate. And there's a lot of misinformation about how there's no rebate in BC. And there is a rebate. It's just that the income line in order to qualify that is very low. But there are a lot of people who are under that very low income line that depended on these rebates, and they're not coming either. And that's shitty timing. I think that if you're going to make something this quick, if you're going to drop prices like real quick, that's great. Be a hero for a quarter. Give them their check this quarter because they were looking forward to it. And at the very last minute, you pulled the rug out and said, it's not coming.
Oh, no, they're still going to give the rebate.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
For the last wrong about quarter. That? Because it said that the rebate was also being.
Yeah, but it's behind a quarter.
Okay, good.
So the income that was collected from the carbon tax from January to April 1st will be dispensed.
Okay.
But going forward, they'll have to come up with something else or find some other way to support these people. But it's not as big as the federal amount that
it's not. And I've never been so happy to be wrong in my life. When I read that they were canceling the rebate program immediately, I thought that meant no more checks. And I'm glad that they have at least one more, but you should recognize, and I know a lot of people are going to say with cheaper prices, they're not going to be paying it anyways. I don't think that they realize how much those rebates really meant to people who needed them the most.
Yeah, it's not as much. Like I said, it's not as much as the federal one. Like my kids get it, right? Because they're adults now and they're low income. And it was $193, I think, for the quarter. It's an extra, but then that off.
That's still an entire grocery haul for a family, right?
Yeah. And I'm not saying that they shouldn't be replaced with something or find some other way to offer that relief. But I think that it's not quite as bad as the people who are going to be missing out on the federal rebate. I think the federal rebate, a lot of people pocketed a lot more money on the federal rebate than they did in British Columbia on the provincial rebate. Because remember, that program was introduced by a conservative government. So the rebates aren't as plush.
They're not as generous.
Yeah, not as generous. So anyway, so let's get into Stanley Park. My kids actually made me aware of this, and my daughter was so funny. She's, you need to talk about this on your channel. You have far reach. You need to talk about this. So what's happening in Stanley Park is that the city has gone in without consultation with stakeholders and overridden the Parks Board to give a contract to a logging company to go in and remove what they are saying are infested trees, infested with elm moth. What's it called? It's something to do with a Eurasian moth infestation or something that they say these trees are a danger.
They say that they're a danger because of this moth infestation, that they are a wildfire risk. However, I think that they're a risk is because they're saying it.
Yeah, and there's been no oversight on the logging company. No environmental people have been, or Indigenous people, because remember, Stanley Park is Indigenous territory. Nobody's been consulted and been able to verify how diseased these trees are. And also my kids, because one of my kids, his teacher actually is part of the lawsuit, because in BC now, you have to have First Peoples English in order to graduate high school. It's indigenous. It's an indigenous course. And she's been on leave dealing with this. And he was telling me, because they were learning about it in school, he said that they're saying that they're removing them because of the wildfire. They're using wildfire as an excuse. But he said, actually, what's happening is those are microcosm environments that keep the forest wet. And there's lots of creatures and stuff that live in those ecosystems that is part of the ecosystem of the park. And by removing the trees, they're actually drying out the park worse and putting it at a higher risk for forest fire. And the thing is that we're not talking like just a half dozen trees here. We're talking
30,000 trees.
30,000 trees want to log out of there with no oversight.
Yeah.
And they're overriding the parks board to do it. And Ken Sim made that call and he is not backing down on it. So now they're going to court.
Yeah. I hope they get stopped. Listen, if it really is a risk and the risk is greater than the damage that you're going to do, which I don't believe it is, but I don't know. No. I'm not a tree expert. I don't know if these things are actually infested. I think it looks shady that you're like, "Hey, we just have to spend all this money for this logging company. They're probably going to make a lot of money off 30,000 trees." Yeah. A lot of money. It made me think about how Trump was like, "Oh, we don't need anybody. His number. Look how many trees we have." No thought for what it does to the overall big picture. Just a tree's worth some money. Let's chop it down and sell it. And he wants to do that to 30,000 trees. While just a short while ago, he put in some work to dismantle the parks board, which would be the people that stand in that kind of way.
Yeah, exactly. And it's shady as hell.
It's super shady. I got to make a video about that too. Remind me if you don't see a video about, have you made a video about it?
Not yet. No.
I'm making a note.
Yeah. Because it's like you try to dismantle the parks board and then you're pulling crap like this and you're going over, you're overruling the parks board.
Yeah.
And now I know why his ABC counselors were resigning from ABC off of the parks board. Like they resigned from the party. They were really mad about it. Anyways, yeah. I'm glad to hear that he got booed. And I'm glad to hear that people can see him for what he is. Because he has not been good for Vancouver. He has not been good for us at all. He's been good for the rich. Been good for
That's
the
why
rich.
Chip Wilson bought him the position.
Yeah, of course.
Allegedly. Yep. Don't sue me, Chip Wilson. let's move out of BC. Let's go international to wrap it up. Tomorrow is what the Americans, what Donald Trump is calling Liberation Day, which I think is corny. He's calling it Liberation Day, where they're going to put on reciprocal tariffs. And you can just tell that press secretary practiced using the word reciprocity many times. You could tell it wasn't natural to her, but she mentioned it many times. In my opinion, Canada doesn't get hit. I hope I'm right. I don't know. I might not be right. But let's start with the vote that the Republican senators are talking about with having to do with this, the emergency vote, or not the emergency vote. This, I think it's a special vote, the one that you'd sent me.
Yeah. So what's happening right now, actually, is Cory Booker is filibustering on the Senate.
He's going to set a record. If he can keep going until past, I think, 4:30 our time.
Yeah. The longest, I think Ted Cruz holds the record for 21 hours. No. I think
Strom Thurmberg in the 1950s, 24 hours and 18 minutes to filibuster against civil rights acts.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that Booker breaks that record so that the record's for a good reason.
Yeah.
He's had no bathroom breaks.
No bathroom breaks, nothing.
He had
guys just yapping. And every time I tune in too, guy's looking fresh, doesn't look tired at all.
Yeah. No. And his page took his chair away after 3 hours. And the way he's giving himself little breaks is he's getting his colleagues in the Senate to ask him questions. So he doesn't have to talk the whole time. They do, that is a mechanism of the filibuster, that they can continue filibustering as long as they're being asked questions.
So there's actually an episode of this on Scandal.
Yes.
Melly does it.
I remember that. Yeah. So anyways, what the Democrats are putting forward, a bill to remove the emergency declaration at the north border, because they are they're wise to Trump's ways, and they know that this is all smoke and mirrors. This is all made up. It has nothing to do with fentanyl, which is the reasons he gave for the tariffs. And when they remove that, they don't have a reason to have those tariffs anymore. So they're hoping that they can get some Republican friends, work bipartisan, to get them to back this bill. Now, this is going to be a real test for the Republican Senate. Yep, there's Corey.
There's Corey looking fresh.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He's still going.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, and he hasn't resorted to things like reading the phone book or anything like that.
Yeah.
He is absolutely stuck on his focus around Trump and how Trump is so bad for America.
And Musk.
For 19 hours.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Absolutely amazing.
But anyways, if they can get Republicans to side with them in the Senate, they can pass a bill saying that. Now, it probably won't pass the House. And if it did pass the House by some miracle, Trump would just end up vetoing it. But at least it's on the record saying that we don't deserve what Trump is doing to us and that there's no factual reason for this.
Here's the thing. Like, I saw it on X today, where Fox News was pushing, look how much money the tariffs are going to make. The tariffs are going to add $600 billion overall, $100 billion just in the auto industry. And everybody's cheering. Everybody's, look how rich we're going to be. Look how rich we're going to be. And then somebody in the comments are like, it's from us. It was an American who was commenting saying, we're the ones who are paying that $600 billion. It's not that other countries are going to give us an extra $600 billion. Yeah. The government is going to take $600 billion from us.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't understand.
They don't
understand. And they don't understand how many times those cars cross the border. It's really bizarre how they just, somebody made a really good point. I was watching a TikTok today. Somebody made a really good point. It was Mr. Global. And he said, all of this is strictly because Donald Trump wants Americans to hate Canada, because then he can have permission to storm into Canada and take the country.
Yep.
And that's all this is. If he can get enough Americans on his side to hate Canada, then he's got reason to come in and go after us, because they're too divided right now. They can't do it when they're so divided.
Not just Americans. They're also training some Canadians.
Yes.
There's some Canadians that are
100%
on board with this.
Yeah.
And that's a smarter move on his behalf, not just to get his country to believe in this, but to get people into the country that you want to take over to believe in it too. Yeah. I think what's going to happen is, I think that there's some Republicans who are going to be put in a tough spot. I think there's going to be some Republicans who agree with this. Now, here's the thing. It is bullshit. It is total bullshit that the reason that these tariffs are off is because of that there's a fentanyl concern. If the fentanyl coming from Canada, if that 1% was such a concern, like that Carolyn Leavitt says, oh, it's enough to kill this many people and it went up this much, which just means that it was only at 20 pounds the year before or something. Mm-hmm. It's less than a carry-on suitcase. If it was actually a concern the way that they're claiming that it is, it would have been in their annual threat analysis. Yeah. And it wasn't. Not a peep. They talked about fentanyl being a concern. They talked about the fentanyl coming from Mexico being a concern. Canada who?
Yeah.
So, well, I think they're going to be put in a tough position, though, because in the Republican Party, like, it's all loyalty, man. It's Costa Nostra over there. Mm-hmm. Everything is just about bend the knee for dear leader.
Yep.
And if they color outside the lines, I think that they have worried. But also, if they don't, then they're going to lose their jobs in their next vote too. Their constituents see that they're supporting something that is hurting them. They're going to get voted out.
Yep. And that's actually one of the reasons why Cory Booker is filibusting, because people are really pissed off at the Democrats, because 10 of them voted with the Republicans to pass the budget.
Like Schumer.
Yeah, there he is.
Still get him, Booker.
Still going strong.
I would also like to talk about Asia ganging up on the States. That is my words, not anybody else's. So China, South Korea, and Japan have had trade talks for the first time in 10 years. They never talked to each other because they're so busy trading with the States. And now everybody is saying, too, why are they isolating themselves? Are they just going to trade dollars with each other? just buy from each other. They have a big population, but not but as big as the world.
They hate each other. Hate. Like, my daughter was filling me in on, she's an anthropology student and she watches documentaries for fun and stuff. And she was filling me in on the history between, especially between Japan and Korea, and how Japanese soldiers went and invaded Korea and enslaved women and made them like concubines for the military, the Japanese military in Korea, and how China hates all of them. And so for these three nations to come together and even mention the fact that they might be even denuclearized,
yeah,
is like unbelievable. This is,
we're living through history, I'm telling you.
Like, Trump is uniting the world.
Yeah.
And Canadians. Yeah. We're taking the flag back.
Yeah.
Like, he's uniting every country. Did you see Denmark today? The Prime Minister of Denmark, he just said, we are never, to J.D. Vance, because J.D. Vance scolded Denmark, saying that Denmark hasn't been taking very good care of the...
I saw that.
The Greenlandian people. Yeah. And the Prime Minister of Greenland was like, yeah, we don't need you.
Yeah.
We don't need you. We will never, ever be part of the U.S. So the U.S., you know, the silver lining to all of this is that they're uniting the rest of us.
Yeah, totally. And they're so arrogant about it. They're talking about Greenland, like they're even JD going, even though they were so not wanted, they knew that they weren't wanted. They ended up having to go to just see other Americans who were in Greenland. What does that say?
It says they're going to find a way to force crypto. Yeah, that's the theory down in the U.S. Definitely. There's another really nice comment here in the chat. I could listen to you women all day long. I've become so much more politically aware. Thank you. And I love that.
I love that. Thank you so much. That I love that. Can I tell you guys something that happened? Sherry and I were out for coffee with a couple of other political creators from TikTok. Yeah. And we were there for a 4.5 hour session. Yeah. Which we could have gone even longer too if we didn't have to go. But as we were talking, there was an older lady that was behind us who stood up and said, I don't mean to interrupt, but I'm really interested in your conversation. And I just got to say, absolutely, hands down, the best part of doing any of this when somebody else appreciates. I think especially for us political nerds, we've all come across the glazed face from our friends and family who would rather not engage in this.
Yeah.
So to find other people who appreciate it is gold, man. Thank you so much. I absolutely love it.
And the thing I really love is the older women who are feeling empowered by what we do gives them confidence to also take their own power in politics and be able to make their own content and be able to talk about these things and be able to correct their husbands and say, no, you're wrong. It's like, it's that I love that so much. Because
you know what else I love that there are more older women speaking up. I'm finding more and more all the time. But what amuses me, what entertains me, what makes me laugh hard from my belly is when somebody tries to use, but you're old as an insult. I think it's hilarious.
I
really do. I don't understand. I remember being young thinking that old people didn't get it. But when you're talking about politics and when you're talking about patterns of political history and stuff, I honestly don't understand. You're old. As if we were all doing makeup videos or something.
Yeah.
And they're like, hey, you ladies are old. You know what? Maybe.
Yeah.
And I think you could still make an argument for makeup for older ladies or whatever. Yeah. But the age, I think, when you're talking politics, I feel like it has an advantage. And that's why it's funnier that it's an insult.
Especially when you can recognize historical patterns, right?
Yeah.
And you have historical context. This was the thing with the 20-year-old kid I was arguing with the other day who kept telling me I wasn't using critical thinking skills. Like, he must have called me unintelligent at least half a dozen times simply because of how old I was. And it was like, dude, you're 20. You haven't even probably voted in a freaking election. Like, you weren't 18 in 2021. You probably didn't even vote. Like, how would you know anything? Like, it's just, it's wild. It's
the arrogance of youth. I had it. Honestly, when I was young, I had it.
Oh, yeah.
But just not in politics. I would never, if it was in my 20s, I would never look at somebody in their 50s and say that they wouldn't understand about politics.
Yeah.
I think it's funny.
Yeah.
I'm 20, anyways. Look at me.
Here I am. What's that?
I'm 20. Just look at me.
All right, my fellow Gen X ladies, I think we should wrap it up. We will be live on Friday now. Tell your friends twice a week, Maple Minds podcast, Tuesdays and Fridays, 1 o'clock Pacific time, 4 o'clock Eastern time.